You are all set.
Okay, well, I am Maurice and I am an alcoholic and I'm from the acceptance group here in Oshawa. And can you hear me start off with? Yes, okay.
Yes, perfect.
Yes, thank you, Jim, for asking me and John for recommending me. I don't normally speak on Zoom, so it's a little new for me, but that's okay. I'm going to give it a shot. 45 minutes. Okay, well, that's either a really long time or it's going to be a really short time. I'm not quite sure. I think it's going to be long, but I'm going to do my best. If you've heard me before, I'm going to apologize in advance. So hopefully you have a pillow nearby. If you fall asleep, your head doesn't hit the desk. And if you haven't heard me before, well, go get yourself a pillow. And if I'm not loud enough, let me know. I'm actually sitting in my basement as opposed to keeping my wife up. Anyway, so I'll start from the usual beginnings. I'm from a large family. I'm from a family of nine. I'm from Quebec City. I should say there's nine siblings and my two parents, so 11 of us. But I'm from Quebec City, and which makes me a French Canadian. I grew up in what I would say is a very dysfunctional family. But I want to send a caveat out that I think it's, at least for me, I think as dysfunctional as it was, I never really looked at it as it being so dysfunctional. It was just what I was used to growing up to or in. My dad was an alcoholic. And I wish I had his little black book. I think he was an AA member, but I wish I would. I don't actually have anything of my dad's, but I wish I did have it. My mom wasn't an alcoholic. She was a very moderate drinker at best. And but growing up, I was surrounded with booze and mental illness. And I had a sister that died very young at the age of, I was just under two, and she was pretty much a newborn, and she died of meningitis, and I think that started a string of depressions in my mom. And my dad's coping skills was to really to drink a lot. We moved to Ontario, in southern Ontario, to Toronto in just 1966. My uncle was already living here. For anybody who knows a bit of the history of Quebec, there wasn't much work back then. And so he decided to relocate to Ontario. And in the process, we moved to Ontario, which I hear all the time, this geographical change that will help people. It didn't help my dad's alcoholism. And this story is not about my dad, but the beginning of my life his impact on me is truly. Anyway, we moved to Ontario, and my parents decided to get separated in 1967, and my dad moved into a rooming house. And believe it or not, the best decision they thought at the time was for me to live with my dad. Who was by then a binge drinker, so he wasn't a daily drinker, but when he drank, he would go on 2 or 3 month binges. And the main reason for that is that my mom had taken up into bootlegging in the house, and I don't really know the whole story about it, but I do know she was a bootlegger, and that's how she kept the heat going. Anyway, so I ended up living with my dad, and I lived with him till the age of 11, till he passed away. But in the process of the ages of 6 to 11, my usual routine was, besides getting up, going to school, and all that, while my dad was drinking, was basically to kind of make sure that he was okay. It was kind of weird. I was a kid taking care of my father. And so at a very young age, I got used to seeing him go through DTs and withdrawals and all of which I didn't fully understand. Well, as a matter of fact, I probably didn't understand, but I knew it wasn't anything to joke around or to make fun of. And little did I know that later in life, I would be suffering from the same disease. It led to, I guess now when I look at it, it led to a life that, of a lot of insecurities. I never wanted to bring anybody home, but I have a lot of friends. And I guess more thinking, but part of it is I think I had this level of shame that I was living in a room, in a rooming house. And I never knew when I came home if my dad would be drunk or sober. Now, I do want to also emphasize that for whatever reason, my dad was incredibly loving, whether he was drunk or sober. And he made it, certainly made it very clear he cared about me. And he definitely was neglectful when he was drunk, but when he was sober, he was certainly there and very remorseful for his actions. Anyway, so that's kind of my early childhood. When I turned 11, my father had a massive heart attack and literally died in my arms. And so the natural progression would be to move back with my mom, but because my mom was still in the bootlegging business, I ended up going back to Quebec and studying for a couple of years at a Jesuit school. And in between, I was living with my uncle, who was my dad's twin brother. I lasted there about 2 years. And the main reason I left, came back to Ontario, was my uncle, Jean-Marie, was not towards me, but towards his family, was a violent alcoholic when he drank. He too was a binge drinker, so he didn't drink all the time. But when he did drink, the level of violence that he exhibited towards his family to me was disgusting, and it was something that I hadn't really seen with my dad. At least I hadn't witnessed it, and so I ended up moving back to Toronto when I was 11, and it prompted my mom to give up her business. And I ended up studying in Toronto. I played a lot of hockey, and I ended up getting injured playing hockey. And I was seeing a physiotherapist, and recommendation of my doctor. And in there, he had recommended that I either take up yoga or take up dance. And I didn't really know what yoga was, and I certainly knew what dance was, but I ended up, fortunately, taking classes from a lady named Gretchen Warren, and which led me, of all places, it led me to audition a year and a half later for the school at the National Ballet of Canada, which I got accepted in. And for a few years, I was until I was 19, I was a dancer. And all of this time, I haven't really mentioned any booze because I didn't really drink or partake in drugs. And so it's not really part of my story, but I'll just backtrack a bit. When I was 15, I moved out of my home, out of my mom's house. And part of that reason was I had a brother that I later took care of. But at the time was quite an athlete, and he was training. He was a cyclist, and he was training, I think, to make the young Canadian team or Olympic team, but the juniors as opposed to the men's team in cycling. And he got in an accident, and he ended up hitting a pole with his head, or I wasn't there, but he was hospitalized, and after that he was no longer the same person. He suffered some type of brain injury, but it also changed his personality. He went from being really quite a wonderful person to being what I would describe as bipolar. And in the process of it, it just made life miserable at home. And I was the youngest there, and he was 7 years older than me. So I was 15, he was 22 or 23. And I tried to convince my mom to throw him out of the house, really. And to my surprise, she actually said no, she couldn't do it. But she also said to me, if I wasn't comfortable there, it was up to me to move. And which I did. I actually packed my bags and I moved. And it's funny how, since I've been in this program, it's allowed me to work on my steps and think about a lot of things. And it's funny how at the time you don't realize it, but or I didn't realize it, but there I had a bit of a guardian angel, and I think I've always had a bit of a guardian angel looking over me. And I ended up working at this place in Toronto while I was in school. I got a job at a place called 519 Community Center. And I was there working at night in maintenance, and I was underage. I had to be 16, and the coordinator knew I was underage, but he knew my situation. So he lied on the application for the city, which allowed me to work there, which allowed me to get a room in a house. And I ended up getting a room with a couple of university students and two med students at the, sorry, one Sony songwriter and one med student at the time. And the reason I bring that up is that, at 15 years old on the streets of Toronto, Toronto back then wasn't what Toronto is today, but I could have easily fallen through the cracks of, breaking into houses, stealing cars, selling drugs, prostitution. But instead, I ended up in the hands of people that were all in their mid-20s, that were all in the educational field or in the medical field, which kind of formed a bit of my life. But in the process of working at the 519, which I kind of came to a realization not that long ago, one of my jobs on Wednesday nights and Saturday, Sunday was to clean up after an AA meeting. And I used to sit in that meeting. So from the age of 15 till 18, till I moved to New York, I probably sat in 1,000 meetings. And, the irony of it now that I look back is when I would listen to the speaker speak, it was always an open meeting, and I would listen to what they had to say. It's unbelievable how much of it I could relate to. I couldn't relate to their binges and to their drinking because it wasn't part of my life, but I could relate to them being arrested because I had seen it in my family. I could relate to them talking about DTs because I had gone through numerous amount of times with my father. I could relate to them talking about their drug problem. I had by that time at 18, I had already lost a brother due to drug addiction. A father died of a heart attack, but without doubt, booze had a lot to do with it. And when I turned 18, a brother that was an engineer for Toronto that committed suicide. Certainly mental issues that were going on. Anyway, my life was pretty normal, not boring to say anything. I moved to New York for a year, danced for American Ballet Theatre, came back to Toronto, and applied to two things. I decided dance wasn't, I didn't think, 'cause they were partying too much. I mean, the irony of this It is. I didn't like the lifestyle because anybody that knows the arts, they tend to party a lot, and you work hard and you play hard there too, and then. I came for CFT, and ironically, I got accepted at both. And I decided that I would go towards the educational part as opposed towards the police department. And sometimes I wonder if I made the right decision or not. But anyway, I had just kind of started drinking around that age, but very mildly. I would, go out and have a few drinks and nothing. I might have had one or two drunks, but nothing that I would consider abnormal or out of the question. And met my first wife, and that's kind of where my drinking story starts off. I had just finished my bachelor's science degree, and I was in. Had been accepted at Saint at UFT in the medical program, and I was in my second year, and my wife was pregnant with twins, and we had twins, and we were just scratching by, just making ends meet. And then my wife got pregnant again, and so I decided I was going to leave school for a year, and to make a long story short, I never returned back to school. I never, well, I did, but not in that field. I never went back into medicine. And that's kind of where my drinking starts off with my ex-wife. She's now my ex-wife, the mom of my three kids, is, according to her, not an alcoholic, but not a person that goes by a day without ever having a number of drinks, so I'm not quite sure where she falls in. But I'm not going to take her. I'm not here for inventory. But what I will say, when I made my amends after I joined this program, I was sitting with her, having lunch, and I was talking to her, and I was apologizing about my side of the fence, and she made a comment to me that really resonated, and she said, "Maurice, when I met you, you never drank and you didn't really know how to drink. I'm the one who taught you how to drink." And she kind of said it in a sense like it was an award as opposed to, well, as opposed to what it was. And she definitely didn't make me an alcoholic, I can tell you that. But she certainly introduced partying to me that I wasn't used to. Anyway, we got separated when I was 33 years old. I got married when I was 22, and we got separated when I was 33. And I would say from the age when my marriage started falling apart, from about 31 to well, to the age of 40. So from 31 to 40 is where my drinking really kind of took off. And then after my separation, listen, I'll talk a bit just for a second, a bit about my first marriage. When I first got married, I was thinking about this, and I think there was 46 people at the wedding, that I can tell you. And for my wife's ex-wife's family, it was a very small wedding. But I think the entire night I had a glass of wine or a glass of champagne while I was giving toasts, and that's how little I drank back when I was 22 years old. And by the time I quit, so between the age of 32, I would say, to 39, by the time I quit, I had accomplished getting arrested 5 times for impaired. I had gone to court, obviously. Audits spent, I don't know how many tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars on lawyers to fight it. I was completely broke, somehow staying out of jail, making some decent money, working in construction, making some decent money, but my money was either going towards child support and the rest of it was going to pay my rent, which I paid And then after that, the rest of it just went to booze. And I was living one horrible life, to be honest with you. But I somehow felt that's what I deserved. I felt like, you know what, I've somehow our marriage has crumbled, and you know, I've let my kids down, and so on and so forth. And even though I knew I had a drinking problem, I never somehow wasn't registering with me that I was an alcoholic. And I met my present wife that I've been with for 25 years now. And what happened there is she wasn't a big drinker then, and she's certainly not a big drinker now. Her name's Tammy, so I'll just use her name. But after about seeing her for about a year, we were getting somewhat serious. And one day she decided to bring me to this Al-Anon meeting, and that I didn't know was Al-Anon, but she said to me, "I'm going to bring you to a meeting." And she brought me out to an Al-Anon meeting, and I sat there, and I can't really tell you exactly what happened. The only thing I can't tell you what the speaker spoke about, but what I can tell you, what there was a lady in the audience that was just sobbing. It was best way I can describe it. For me, it was palatable, and the empathy I had for her afterwards. I was talking to my at the time girlfriend about it. And she got really quite irate with me. And she said, "You know, I brought you to this meeting, not so you could see somebody else that's in pain. I brought you this meeting to show you the kind of pain that I'm under." And whatever she said, it hit a raw, kind of hit a raw nerve. And I was talking to Jim about it yesterday. And that happened to be April 6, 2001. And April 7, 2001, I quit drinking. And I didn't do it through AA or through any other associations or detox centers, rehab centers. I just quit. I thought I'm going to quit for a month. And that month ended up being somewhere between 12 or 13 years. I don't really know how long it was, but it was quite a while. And in the process, in 2003, Tammy and I got married, and hence my second marriage. And what I can tell you, in 2003, on my second marriage, I didn't have a drop of alcohol. So two marriages, I think I had a total of one glass of wine. Anyway, I for a long time, and for the most part, I was a very happy person through sobriety. And then what happened is I never connected the dots, but my wife kind of connected the dots. My father-in-law passed away, and she kind of makes the connection that when he passed away, that's when I kind of got back onto the booze. And I'm not sure if somehow his death triggered something about losing my own father, losing people in my family. As I said, I'm from a family of 11. Right now there's three of us left, so I've been through a lot of deaths in my family, some natural and some definitely not natural, some through suicide, drug overdoses, alcoholism, and a couple through cancer. So obviously natural deaths. And anyway, I'm not quite sure what triggered it, but I started drinking. And in the beginning, I was drinking very mildly, in the sense that I would have a couple of glasses of wine when I was making dinner. And I had completely changed my drinking pattern from being a daily drinker earlier to now. I may have a glass of wine or two glasses of wine every couple of days, every week, every 2 weeks. I don't know. But that slowly over time, over 4 or 5 years, ended up where I became a fairly serious binge drinker where I couldn't wait for my wife to go up to the cottage so I could literally get hammered. And I would know in advance, she would say, okay, in 2 weeks I'm going up to the cottage, or we're going up to the cottage. And I would always figure out an excuse why I had to work, or how I could not be there, or I had to go there a few days late. And the entire reason for it was always I could drink as much as I wanted without her being around. And pretty much that's what I did. I would go out and stock up and just get hammered and completely sloshed. But the sad part about it is I didn't know why I was doing it. I couldn't figure it out. And I've had I'm not quite sure how to introduce this, but I've had a pretty successful life in a sense. I work in the movie business, and I think where John heard me speak was in Wellham, and I was doing Handmaid's Tale out there, which was a TV series. And over my career that I've been in the film business, I've been fortunate enough that we've won a few Emmys, and we've won Golden Globes, and we've won a couple of Oscars. And so in that sense, I've done very well. But as a person, I was completely drained. I had zero in me. And back in 2019, I was in Montreal for business, and I went out on what I would call as a serious bender. And then I'm not a drug user, but I ended up buying a bunch of drugs that I took at the same time, because my total intentions was to end my life. Somehow I didn't. I ended up waking up and was not in great shape, but I'm still here today. And that was kind of the beginning of where I realized that I had a serious problem. I started speaking to my physician about it, who diagnosed me with having a clinical depression. And we got on drugs and on medication. But at the same time, pointed out to me that, my drinking was out of, even though I was a binge drinker, I might want to consider programs. And I got into Bellwood. I did an online Bellwood program during COVID. And I have to say, for me, it wasn't that successful. And it wasn't successful not because the program wasn't successful. It wasn't successful because I really didn't put in much effort into it. I would stay sober for 2 or 3 months and then fall back off for 2 or 3 weeks, and then go back on and back and forth. And it was just a vicious circle. And for the most part, I really didn't want to live. I remember getting up most mornings and really regretting waking up. And in the process, a friend of mine that had successfully defended a couple of impaired cases for me in the past, I was having lunch with, and he recommended this psychiatrist or psychologist that he thought would do me a lot of good. And I ended up speaking with, to this day, I still speak with him. So I still use him, and ended up speaking with this guy named Jim. As a matter of fact, he's out of a little past you guys, but he's out in New York. He used to be out in New York way, and he did a lot of work with the 9/11 rescue workers at the time. Anyway, it started my mind that, I wasn't thinking straight. I was abusing myself. There was no reason for it. On paper, I had everything you wanted. I had a house, I had a cottage, I had a place in Quebec, I had a place in the States. We had money. But mostly, I was just a wreck. like a bloody wreck. And anyway, my last bender, I got completely hammered, and I was in a place called the X Hotel in Toronto, where a lot of the athletes go. And I laugh about it now, but I spent 6 or 7 days there on an absolute tear. And my driver, I have a driver at work. We have drivers in the movie business, so I have a guy that when I'm running locations, he'll drive me around so I can do my notes and all that. But he came and kind of got me out of the hotel and drove me home. I came home. My wife was livid, and she had all these pamphlets of these detox centers I was going to go to and these rehab centers I was going to go to and so on and so forth. And I said, no, I'm not going to any of those. But what I will do is I'll go to an AA meeting. And in the process, that's exactly what happened. That's the first time I went for myself to an AA meeting out in Oshawa. And the first meeting I went to, I have to say, I didn't enjoy it. I didn't think I had anything in common with the people that were there. I don't smoke, and everybody was smoking. And I thought, who the hell are these people? And it was also right at the end of COVID, so there was only 10 people in the room. So it was very limited. But somebody recommended that I go to this different meeting the next day at the Atlanta Club. Some people may know it in Oshawa. And a 10 a.m. Open meeting for men and women. And I went there. And that's where I got my first chip. But somebody said something to me. He said, you know, I recommend that you do 90 days, 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was sitting there thinking about it. And I knew my life was... My marriage was almost over. My life was in shambles. And I had just, not that long earlier, I'd spent years not drinking. So I thought, you know, 90 days is not the end of the world. So I ended up doing my 90-day thing. And at the end of the 90 days, what I said to my wife was, you know what, I'm going to give it a year. And if in a year this works, and I'm back a year and a day later, then you know I like it. If I'm in a bar a year and a day later, then you know what I think of AA. Well, that's 3.5 years ago, and I'm still here, so I guess that's what I thought of it. But what sold me on this program, the brother that I spoke about, that the bipolar brother, he, for a large part of his life, was in and out of institution or living on the street. And about 10 years earlier, I had swooped him off the streets of Toronto, and I had brought him up to Oshawa, and I bought him a house and started taking care of him. And he passed away when I had 4 months sobriety. I actually keep that coin on me. And I went on a morning meditation AA meeting that morning after 4 months, and kind of spoke what I was going to do that day, that I was going to go and reclaim his body and so on and so forth. And a bit like this meeting, somebody said, put in your name and number, and I did. And I didn't know anybody there. And I called work and I let them know I'd be off for a little while because of the death of my family. And their main concern was not the death in the family, but one was I coming back to work. But what happened in the meantime, within the next week or two, I got all kinds of phone calls from people that were on that meeting that somehow wrote down my number, my name, just to make sure that I was okay, make sure that I wasn't drinking, if I needed to go out for a coffee, if I needed to talk, they were there. And these are complete strangers that didn't know me from Adam, all AA members. And it really made me realize how gifted this program is and how fortunate I am to be in this program. It's the only program that I've seen or I know that, you know, I spoke a couple of Sundays ago and I made a comment when I was speaking in Peterborough. And it was a 10 a.m. Sunday meeting also. And I made a comment that if somebody walked into those rooms that had vomit on them and maybe urine in their pants and stunk, they wouldn't be asked to leave. Somebody would get up and shake their hands, give them a coffee and ask if they could help them. And you can go into a hospital, you can go into a church, you can go into a synagogue, and you can go in that condition. And what I can tell you, the chances are they'll ask you to leave. This is the only place I know that everybody wants your success. Everybody's rooting for you. And it's just mind-boggling to me how much this program has done for me. The other thing it's done for me, which was a coincidence, I went to my dad's grave on his 50th anniversary. I went just to tell him that I was an AA member and I was doing okay and how much I miss him and yada, yada, yada. But in the process, what happened is I left there, and my mom and a couple of my brothers are buried 20 graves away. And I chose not to go there. I went to one of my uncle's graves. I went to a couple of my other brothers' graves. But I chose not to go to my mom's grave. And what made me realize afterwards, and took a while, was the resentments I had and the bitterness I had towards one of my brothers and towards my mom. And I would have never dealt with this unless it was with this program. This program made me look at it. The steps made me look at it. And I went back about 6 months later to my mom's grave. And little did I know, one of my brothers buried next to my mom didn't have a tombstone or a marker. And in the process, I ended up getting him a marker. I'm not quite sure how it got overlooked, but it did. And also a person that I had quite a few resentments against. But in the process of doing those two things, the weight that was lifted from me is unbelievable. And I don't think, even though I knew I had resentments there, and it certainly came out when I drank, I don't think I knew how much it was influencing my mental state and my addiction. And I'm pretty sure I would have never ever considered dealing with it had I not done the steps and I not kind of read them again and looked at them. The other beautiful thing for me about this program is that I realized that, I say this to young people getting in, even though I'm new, that the step thing is not you do it once and you throw it out the window. You know, this is a daily thing that you do, and you may not do them all every day, but it's a daily thing that you work on. And you work on how you make your life better. Now you help other people make their lives better and help other people that are struggling. And the beautiful thing about AA for me is that regardless of who it is, we don't all have the same path, but we certainly understand the addiction of it. And we understand the obsession of mine and how debilitating it can be. And honestly can't express in words how grateful I am that somehow in God's will I was brought into these rooms. I have no idea why. I find it ironic that I've been surrounded my entire life by it. When I think back all the way back to my dad, to working as a teenager to make ends meet, cleaning AA meeting ashtray. And to where I am today. And so if you're new or just coming back, you're worth it. Don't give up on yourself. And if you're struggling, don't do it alone. I mean, I don't know in Upper State New York if you have it, but here we have a slogan that you're no longer alone. And the reality is you're not alone. This is not a struggle or a fight that you have to do on your own. Reach out to somebody that you trust, and reach out to somebody in the program. And as Jim said yesterday, don't be afraid to do a bit of service work. It will help you stay sober. It's something that's being given to me freely. And for the amount of energy I have to put in to stay sober compared to the amount of energy I used to have to put in to hide booze in ceilings and behind furnaces, in the garage, it's come a long way. I probably should end it on this. Hopefully I'm not boring the hell out of everybody with what I'm saying, but I've been very fortunate in my life in a lot of ways. I've had a lot of struggles, and I've gone through certainly a life that I tried not to put my kids through or have them live the life that I've lived. But as I said in the beginning, somewhere along the lines, I've had a guardian angel on my side that's somehow gone me through a lot of messes, including all these in pairs that how I never killed anybody is just a small miracle. But anyway, I'm fortunate enough that none of that has happened to me. And through this program, I can honestly say that since I've been sober, we sold our place in Oshawa, and we bought in the Ganarascan Forest. We bought 30 acres, and we're living in the middle of a forest. And my marriage is starting to repair itself from the damage that I've done. And anyway, thank you for having me. I think I'll leave it at that. And happy 24th to everybody else.